Welcome to Outdoor by Four Magazine's audio edition of issue 56. For those unfamiliar with Outdoor by Four, the magazine began its journey as a fully independent, vehicle-based adventure and outdoors lifestyle publication in 2013. Since that time, Outdoor by Four has been the catalyst for expanding the reach of overland and vehicle-based adventure travel into the outdoors market, with a focus not only on the mode of travel, whether a 4x4, motorcycle, bicycle, or by foot, but also in the adventures themselves and the people who live them. In this issue, you'll hear a sampling of stories from Outdoor by Four's print edition, including West Texas Wind, a hiking jaunt through Guadalupe Mountains National Park, Saguaro Traverse, exploring the wild heat of the Sonoran Desert, The Wave, winning the lottery to one of the rarest hikes in the United States, and An Enchanted Adventure, paying tribute to Roy Bainford Inks II, a Texas Hill Country legend. There are also a variety of additional stories in this issue you can read by picking up a copy or by subscribing and receiving a copy as part of your subscription order at www.outdoorx4.com. We hope you enjoyed this issue of Outdoor by Four magazine.
Comfort, it doesn't come easy. The sun beats down, the nights cut cold, and the nearest outlet, it's 100 miles behind you. That's why adventurers trust Renogy, power that doesn't quit. Rugged solar panels built to take a beating, lithium batteries that hold power through the darkest nights, and gear that works every time. Because out here, failure isn't an option. Power your fridge, charge your comms, light up camp, all without burning a single drop of fuel. Renogy, built for the rough, the remote, and the relentless. Find your setup today at Renogy.com.
The Dispatch by Frank Ludwell. Integrity. Merriam-Webster defines it as a, quote, firm adherence to a code of especially moral or artistic values, end quote. While it seems straightforward by definition and is formative as we develop our worldview, a lack of integrity continues to permeate the vehicle-based and outdoor space, the products brought to market, and how those products are introduced to consumers. I'm not naive to human nature and realized long ago many consumers typically base their purchase decision on cost of one product over another. When companies like ARB, KC Highlights, Dometic, and others offer products 2 times to 3 times more expensive than a version that looks identical on Amazon, it can be hard to justify spending more when what appears to be something very similar is available for far less. However, there are a number of nuances associated with this example, and it's important to understand why this is never a good decision. There's an old adage, buy once, cry once, particularly when making purchase decisions for a vehicle that may be used for self-sufficient travel. This rule of thumb is especially true given how the products you use can be the difference between success and failure, or even survival and death. I've heard countless stories of people who became stranded in remote wilderness because the gear they relied on was built by using inferior materials, failing in the field and creating a risk to life and limb. In virtually every instance, the decision to choose cheaper product rather than the originally designed brand product was cause for failure. Of course, other causes such as lack of understanding of how to use the product before going on a journey is a consideration. However, the overwhelming cause is typically failure of product, hence failure of the trip. Getting back to the brands noted before, this is a short list of companies who spent a tremendous amount of money hiring engineers and designers to research and develop products that exceed requirements for adventurists when in the field. Those costs are built into what the end consumer relies on to ensure success when it matters. Unfortunately, there are too many nefarious individuals and companies who have taken those designs, gone overseas to identify a manufacturer to copy those designs, then offer a cheaper alternative online via Amazon, Alibaba, Temu, and others. The result? A substantive economic impact in the neighborhood of $500 billion annually. That's 500 billion with a B. Not to mention lost tax revenues and the impact to legitimate businesses. Additionally, this theft of intellectual property creates a disservice to the brands who put in the time, money, and effort to create quality products we rely on. As an example, I attended SEMA in Las Vegas 15 years ago and was witness to an international brand that was shut down by U.S. Marshals due to claims their products were direct ripoffs of product offered by American Expedition Vehicles, AEV. Less than a decade earlier, another U.S.-based company, 67 Designs, who developed and has continued to sell U.S.-made mounting solutions in Dallas, Texas, sold products to a customer who then went on to form a company named Bullet Point, copy those designs, manufacture them in China, and resell them online via Amazon and on their website, all while marketing them with an American flag. A federal lawsuit ensued in the state of Ohio over fraudulent use of 67 Designs' intellectual property. The point to all of this is cheaper does not always mean better, and especially in the vehicle and outdoor space, is based around the copying of well-respected brands' products, then mass-producing comparable product for pennies on the dollar in a nefarious attempt to confuse consumers for profit. Technology has made this far too easy, and today's major online retail platforms mostly ignore where products are sourced, who developed those products, and the intellectual property associated with those products. My challenge to you is to consider the brands you purchase and take the time to learn their story before clicking Add to Cart before going on your next trip. You'd be surprised how a lack of integrity continues to permeate the online space with products that have diluted quality, all in an effort to cash in on the hard work of the brands who care about the effort that went into developing them in the first place.
Loa began as a village cobbler in Bavaria in 1923. 102 years later, Loa is still based in that same village and is still crafting premium outdoor performance footwear under the world's most stringent environmental and labor standards. From mountaineering, backpacking, hunting, tactical and hiking boots to trail running shoes, Loa is recognized worldwide for the uncompromising quality, fit, and comfort that has made Loa Boots simply more.
Hiking Guadalupe Mountains National Park by Susan and Bill Dragoo. About 2 miles up the trail, you'll run into slush. Beyond that, you'll hit black ice, and the last 500 feet, you'll be walking in at least a foot of snow. Those few words from a park ranger at Guadalupe Mountains National Park seemed to crush our dreams of taking on Guadalupe Peak as a training hike for a Grand Canyon double crossing later in the month. Late spring snowfall made the higher elevations of the trail sketchy, if not downright dangerous, and neither of us was interested in risking a twisted ankle or worse for the questionable reward of struggling up and down the slippery pathway. Bill and I were headed to southern Arizona from our home in central Oklahoma, and we had padded our travel schedule to accommodate the hike. The Guadalupe Mountains of southwest Texas offered a convenient stopover, our target being Guadalupe Peak, the state's high point, with an elevation of 8,751 feet above sea level. The trail to the summit rises 3,000 feet over 4.2 miles, an incline that approaches the elevation change we would face in the Big Ditch. Fortunately, a few miles down the road from the Guadalupe Peak trailhead and the park's main visitor center at Pine Springs, McKittrick Canyon provided an alternative. McKittrick Canyon Trail. Surrounded by the Chihuahuan Desert, just south of the New Mexico border, the Guadalupe Mountains sustain extremes in elevation and moisture, from deep canyons carved by cool streams to pine-topped alpine ridges and the gypsum dunes of the Salt Basin. In the canyons, plants and animals thrive in great diversity, with McKittrick Canyon offering one of the most splendid examples. Lush vegetation and colorful fall foliage along the canyon's spring-fed stream suggest more America's North Woods than what you would expect to find in South Texas. We drove about 4.5 miles northeast of the Pine Springs Visitor Center and another 4.5 miles back northwest on McKittrick Road to the McKittrick Canyon Visitor Center and trailhead. Day hikers should know that the gate to the highway is locked at 5 p.m., if they don't want an unplanned night of camping in the parking lot. Leaving from the backside of the visitor center, the trail starts out flat and easy, much of it graveled and on an old roadbed. Although it involves about 800 feet of elevation change to the grotto, a popular turnaround spot, the grade is so gradual as to be barely noticeable. The path crosses a stream a couple of times. When it is flowing, the water runs clear over stark white rock. A prime attraction after 2.4 miles of easy walking is the Pratt Cabin, built by Wallace Pratt. A petroleum geologist, Pratt bought land in McKittrick Canyon in the 1920s and later donated it to the National Park Service, which combined Pratt's land with that purchased from others to form Guadalupe Mountains National Park in 1972. Pratt's stone cabin was built in 1931-1932 of limestone blocks quarried nearby. It is currently used as an interpretive site, and unfortunately, the interior is not open to the public. Looking through the windows, however, it is tempting to think of it as an interesting place to overnight, and its big front porch offers an inviting spot to sit and contemplate the idyllic surroundings. Here one begins to really appreciate the beauty of the canyon. The Texas madrone trees with their distinctive red bark add color to the landscape, as do even the faded leaves of maples from the previous autumn. Beyond the cabin, the trail narrows and follows the stream. At 3.5 miles, we descended into the grotto, a small cave with rock picnic tables in a shaded alcove near a spring. A short distance farther is Hunter Cabin, a structure once used as a hunting retreat and part of a 1920s ranching operation. Hiking back out of the grotto, we returned to the main trail, continuing steeply up switchbacks to an aptly named opening in the ridge at 5 miles from the start. The Notch is a dramatic viewpoint and an excellent destination for a day hike with a total elevation gain of 1,092 feet. Not the 3,000 feet we were hoping for with Guadalupe Peak, but satisfying nonetheless. Beyond the Notch, the McKittrick Canyon Trail continues to a backcountry campsite and eventually connects with other trails. In all, the park boasts about 80 miles of hiking trails within its more than 86,000 acres. Driving on to Arizona, we spent the next 5 days in Bisbee, a quirky, historic mining town within sight of the Mexico border. Bill taught an adventure motorcycle training class at the Desert Adventure Rally, hosted each spring by motorcycle and overlanding personality Eva Rupert and filmmaker Sterling Noreen. I took advantage of the hamlet's crazy steep staircases to continue my Grand Canyon training, retracing the route of the annual Bisbee 1000 stair climb each day. Fortunately, our schedule was sufficiently flexible that we were able to reschedule the Guadalupe Peak hike for our return trip. Warm, sunny weather had persisted in between, so the summit trail would by this time be clear of snow and ice. Turning east from Bisbee, we began looking for lodging for the night preceding our return to Guadalupe. Carlsbad, New Mexico is about an hour on the east side of the national park, but towns and hotels are sparse to the west of the park. In a stroke of good luck, I happened upon More Travel, Less Talk, a unique campground at Salt Flat, about 30 minutes west of Guadalupe Peak. By the light of day, our abode for the night looked like a barn-shaped storage shed out in the desert, a tiny house roughly 9 by 13 feet, amid a sprinkling of other similar structures, several glamping yurts, and plenty of cactus. It was indeed basic, with just enough room for a queen-size bed, small table and chairs, microwave and fridge. The rustic outdoor shower and toilet were a short walk away. After dark, the place was transformed. We sat outside in the warm night air and gazed at Guadalupe Peak, silhouetted against the eastern horizon. The Milky Way splashed across the sky above, and solar pathway lighting adorned the grounds below, almost as though some of the stars had fallen and continued to glow around our feet. In the pre-dawn of the next morning, the jagged outline of the mountain we were about to climb sliced the orange and pale blue promise of sunrise. I was reminded of what a stagecoach passenger wrote in 1858. In the bright moonlight, we could see the Guadalupe Mountains, 60 miles distant on the other side of the river, standing out in bold relief against the clear sky, like the walls of some ancient fortress covered with towers and embattlements. Guadalupe Peak Trail. By sunrise, Bill and I were leaving the Pine Springs trailhead, a couple of hours behind several hikers who had made the climb to the summit, in time to watch Old Soul peek over the horizon. The trail's elevation profile looks like a fairly constant grade, but the first mile and a half are the steepest. We were thankful for the cool of the morning as we tackled that section. Once beyond that point, the remainder of the ascent felt fairly moderate. The lower part of the trail lacks shade, which, with cool morning temperatures, was not a problem. Even so, it was a relief when the trail turned sharply, entering a pine and fir forest on the north slope of the mountain. 3 miles from the trailhead, the terrain flattens at a false summit in an area with high grass and a spur to a backpacker campground. The trail became narrower and more exposed beyond the campground spur as we approached the summit. We crossed a wooden footbridge built on the edge of a cliff over a deep fissure. I looked up at the summit thinking, we still have that far to go. As we approached the top, the backside of the El Capitan formation came into view, and the trail became more and more rocky. El Capitan, at about 8,000 feet of elevation, catches the eye from many miles away and has served as a landmark for travelers for centuries with its 1,000-foot-high limestone cliff. We reached the summit after a bit of scrambling, crossing one or two areas which felt quite exposed, but were not difficult to negotiate. A few other hikers were lounging at the top, taking time for snacks and a short rest. It was cool and windy, so we didn't linger. Gusts at the summit are reported to reach 80 miles per hour at times. While I expected to see a summit marker, I was impressed by an aluminum obelisk placed there in 1958 by American Airlines to honor the centennial of the Butterfield Overland Mail stagecoaches, which passed through the Guadalupe Mountains from 1858 to 1861 on their way from St. Louis to San Francisco. Waterman L. Ormsby, the only through passenger on the first westbound Butterfield stage, wrote in 1858, "It seems as if nature had saved all her ruggedness to pile it up in this form of the Guadalupe Peak." Had Ormsby climbed to the top of that rugged pile, his awe would have been magnified 1,000 times. Seeing the panoramic view of the salt flats to the west, the Chihuahuan Desert to the south and east, and the forested top of El Capitan below. Bill and I marveled at the number of people just then starting their grueling climb to the summit during the heat of the day, as we were wrapping up our descent. Most of them appeared ill-prepared in every possible way, sweating, groaning, and struggling to catch their breath as they trudged upward with afternoon temps forecast at 97 degrees. How many rescues, we wondered aloud, must the National Park Service do on this mountainside? And who in their right mind would start this ascent in the middle of a hot day? I hope they all survived. Two previous hikes in the Guadalupes are also worth mentioning. Devil's Hall Trail in Pine Springs Canyon also begins at the Pine Springs Trailhead and is 3.8 miles round trip. It starts out unremarkably on a gradually increasing slope and offers only about 650 feet of elevation change. But it's rated as strenuous because after the first mile, it enters a wash filled with huge boulders and loose rock, requiring scrambling, cautious footing, and careful attention. At the end of the trail, we approached a hallway of high stone walls. But to reach it required a steep climb up a stair-like rock formation called the Hiker's Staircase, before edging around a water-filled tinaja. The effort was unquestionably worthwhile. The Devil's Hall formation is a spectacular narrows 200 feet long, with walls 100 feet high and only 15 feet apart. Pinery Station. Near the Pine Springs Visitor Center is the ruin of Pinery Station, one of about 200 relay stations along the legendary 2,800-mile Butterfield Overland Mail route. All that remains are stone walls now propped up by timbers. Named for the nearby pine forests, Pinery Station was the highest station on the Butterfield route at 5,534 feet of elevation and one of the most isolated. A 3/4-mile trail runs from the visitor center to the ruins. It can also be accessed from a parking lot along Highway 180, just outside the park entrance. Our two hikes in the Guadalupe Mountains National Park proved a worthy test and training grounds for our Grand Canyon rim to rim to rim, and is a fine destination regardless. With much more to explore, the Guadalupe Mountains invite us to return for camping, scenic drives, backpacking, and many other day hikes. Info: Guadalupe Mountains National Park offers a substantial network of trails and backcountry camping. It is also adjacent to the Lincoln National Forest and near Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Ample lodging and dining are available in Carlsbad, New Mexico. For authentic Mexican food, try El Jimador at 509 South Canal Street in Carlsbad. Campgrounds. We highly recommend More Travel, Less Talk, 30 minutes west of the national park at Salt Flat. See moretravellesstalk.com or More Travel Less Talk on Facebook. Developed campgrounds in the national park include Pine Springs, located at the Pine Springs Trailhead, and Dog Canyon, 2 hours north of Pine Springs. Best time to go. Mild winter days offer comfortable hiking, and you can expect temperate weather in spring and fall. Colorful foliage also makes autumn a good time to go. The heat makes summer less desirable for hiking. Getting there. Guadalupe Mountains National Park is located in far west Texas, 110 miles east of El Paso, Texas, and 56 miles southwest of Carlsbad, New Mexico, or 62 miles north of Van Horn, Texas on Highway 54. The closest large commercial airline service is El Paso, Texas.
Since 2017, 230 has been a leader in the ever-evolving overland market. Whether it's high-quality products such as rooftop tents, awnings, or a variety of camp life gear, 230 is all about delivering adventure with a made-better principle, opting on better products, not cheaper ones. If you're looking for quality gear to get you into the backcountry and back, look no further than 230. Visit them at www.230.com.
Saguaro Traverse, Exploring the Wild Heart of the Sonoran Desert, by Ben Easley. Famous for its majestic saguaro forests, burnt maroon mesas, and craggy bluffs, the Sonoran Desert, sometimes referred to as the Colorado Desert, covers much of southern Arizona. At 100,000 square miles, it's one of the largest deserts in North America, spilling into southeastern California, covering most of the Baja Peninsula and a large portion of the Mexican state of Sonora. It also happens to be the wettest and greenest desert on the continent. Although the saguaro is by far the most iconic plant of the region, the desert is also home to prickly pear, mesquite, creosote, palo verde, and over 300 more species of cacti. The Sonoran's bimodal weather pattern creates two distinct wet seasons. In the winter, storms blow in from the Pacific, bringing consistent and lighter rains. In the summer, tropical monsoons drop short but intense bursts of precipitation, often triggering flash floods. These two wet seasons act as nature's irrigation system, bringing the desert to life. Visit Ajo Mountain Drive and Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, and you'll feel like you're walking through a cactus and succulent garden. I'm not kidding. It really is that impressive. In fact, some portions of the Sonoran Desert receive enough rainfall to be classified as subtropical. And speaking of the tropics, many of the desert plants found in the Mojave and Sonoran trace their evolutionary lineages back to tropical climates farther south. Within southern Arizona, the Basin and Range Province dominates the landscape. Normal faulting in this region has stretched and thinned the Earth's crust, creating a topography of alternating basins and mountain ranges. This helps explain why southern Arizona is filled with so many broad valleys and isolated ranges, like the Catalinas, that seem to shoot up out of nowhere. These ranges, also referred to as sky islands, rise dramatically from these desert valleys, creating isolated habitats that foster unique evolutionary paths and a wealth of endemic and near-endemic plant and animal species. Other prominent features within the Sonoran Desert include the Colorado River, numerous playas, which are dry lake beds, cinder cone fields, and massive dune systems like the Gran Desierto de Altar in northern Sonora, which contains the largest dune field in North America. For locals and visitors alike, there's no shortage of opportunity to explore the beauty and recreation of southern Arizona. Tens of millions of acres of BLM and national forest land are open to the public, not to mention a collection of parks, monuments, and preserves worth visiting. Saguaro National Park in the Tucson area, Sonoran Desert National Monument near Phoenix, Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument in the Ajo area, Ironwood Forest National Monument near Tucson, the Cofo National Wildlife Refuge in the Yuma area, Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge in Sasabe, and El Pinacate y Gran Desierto de Altar Biosphere Reserve in Sonora, Mexico. If you're chasing that classic Sonoran experience among towering saguaros, head to Saguaro National Park, Sonoran Desert National Monument, Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument, or COFA National Wildlife Refuge. Each offers endless opportunities to get lost in the cactus forest. But there's much more to this desert than just saguaros. El Pinacate y Gran Desierto de Alta Biosphere lets you get up close and personal with volcanic cones via a scenic auto tour. And if you're itching to play in the sand, the dunes of the Gran Alta make California's glamis look like a sandbox in comparison. The expansive grasslands of Buenos Aires National Wildlife Refuge, meanwhile, form a transition zone between desert biomes and are teeming with pronghorn, mule deer, coyotes, and on rare occasion, the elusive jaguar. One of the best ways to experience the Sonoran Desert is by tackling the 300-mile Saguaro Traverse, an overland route that encircles the greater Tucson area. Despite its proximity to the city, many of the dirt roads and trails on the western and northern edges of the route see little traffic. In fact, we spent nearly the entire day driving through Ironwood Forest National Monument without seeing another soul, until we hopped back onto Silverbell Road, which tends to draw a bit more off-road traffic. Like many routes and trails in Arizona, you'll encounter sections with narrow trails, some moderate rocky bits, nothing overly technical, and of course, a healthy dose of desert pinstriping. A stock 4x4 with solid all-terrain tires, or a mid-weight dual-sport motorcycle will do just fine on the Saguaro Traverse. Thanks to its location, the route is a great weekend getaway for folks in the Phoenix and Tucson metro areas. Whether you're just looking to spend a night or two on the trail, or turn it into a longer 4 or 5 day backcountry adventure, the Saguaro Traverse delivers. The route officially kicks off in the Tucson Mountain District of Saguaro National Park. Although much of this early section is paved, aside from the dirt loop around Hohokam Road, it's still worthwhile. This part of the park features rugged, mountainous terrain covered in thick stands of saguaro. Hohokam Road offers a mellow warm-up before diving into the more rugged terrain of the neighboring Ironwood Forest. Ironwood and mesquite trees dominate the National Monument lands to the northwest. The trails here are among the rockiest on the entire loop, though still manageable for any stock 4x4 with decent clearance and tires. As you near the northern boundary of the monument, you'll pass through Old Silverbell Mining District. This massive complex of open-pit mines has been in operation since the 19th century and remains an active copper producer today. History buffs and Cold War junkies alike will enjoy a side trip to the nearby Titan II missile site, constructed in the 1960s as a part of America's Cold War nuclear deterrent. The site has long since been decommissioned, but a few concrete pads remain, along with signs and maps that help you visualize the original missile complex. At the northern end of the Silverbell Mining District lies Sasco. Labeled a ghost town, only remnants of Sasco's old mining facilities remain. A handful of impressive concrete structures stand, including a series of parallel retaining walls now covered in graffiti. Unfortunately, sites like this are often marred by vandalism and trash, so if you visit, consider packing out more than you packed in. Crossing Highway 79, the route ventures into the northern portion of the Saguaro Traverse. This area was a hotbed of ranching activity during the 19th and 20th centuries. The old 96 Ranch was once one of the region's largest cattle operations. Its dilapidated house and outbuildings are worth a visit, though reports suggest a new owner may have posted no trespassing signs. Like the trails of Ironwood, many of the tracks through the northern section are tight and rocky, so brace yourself for more desert pinstriping. To the south of Oracle lies the eastern portion of the route. Aside from the rocky track that leads to the summit of Mount Lemmon, most of the trails in the area are in relatively good condition. During our traverse, the gate to the Mount Lemmon lookout was closed due to a recent storm. But when accessible, the spectacular views from the top are a must-see. Just keep in mind, the out-and-back drive via control road can take 4 to 5 hours for most vehicles. Descending from Mount Lemmon, the route follows a series of dirt county roads before connecting with Reddington Pass Road. The pass has a few bumps as it climbs into the Santa Catalinas, but once you reach the summit, sweeping views of Tucson unfold before you. From there, the road winds down through hairpin turns, eventually dropping into the old estates and horse properties of the Tanque Verde neighborhood. The Saguaro Traverse offers far more than just a scenic desert drive. It's a deep dive into the Sonoran's diverse ecosystems, rugged geology, and fascinating human history. From ghost towns to missile silos, volcanic cones to sweeping grasslands, this loop showcases the multifaceted beauty of southern Arizona in a way few other routes can. Whether you've got a long weekend or a full week to explore, the Saguaro Traverse will leave you with a new appreciation for the so-called greenest desert in the world, and probably a few more desert pinstripes to remember it by. The innovators behind the award-winning Wild Top Truck Caps have once again redefined the soft truck cap with their latest evolution, the new Wild Top Beast. Its integrated 360-degree rack system delivers a class-leading static load rating of 1,500 pounds, rivaling hardtop capabilities at a fraction of the cost. A custom T-slot system in both the rack and internal frame allows for secure and easy accessory attachment. Hungry for adventure? Hear the mighty roar of the Wild Top Beast. Now available at www.wild-top.com.
Winning the lottery to one of the rarest hikes in the United States. Words by Angela McCurran. We won, I sang as I danced around our van. Oh yeah, we're going to the wave. As I showed the email to my husband Micah, it quickly became a dance party for two. For 14 years, I had dreamed of visiting the iconic undulating pink and orange sandstone originally made popular by a Microsoft Windows desktop wallpaper. This is a protected site and only 64 people are allowed in per day, with 16 permits reserved for local travelers. All our prior applications had ended in rejection. This time, luck smiled on us after only 2 days of trying. Early on May 24th, we drove to Page, Arizona to pick up our coveted permit, granting us official access to the wave for 24 hours. The dream finally felt tangible and our research began. Maps, blogs, social media deep dives. We discovered that the area encompassed far more than the famous wave. There were arches, alcoves, and Mars-like rockscapes waiting to be explored. We wanted to experience it all. Being well accustomed to route finding and hiking in the dark, we set our goal to be at the wave by sunrise, allowing for maximum time in the area at cooler temperatures. At the end of May, the sun's daily showtime is no joke. With a 5:10 a.m. curtain call, we found ourselves setting our alarms for 2:30 a.m. By 3:20 a.m., we were at the trailhead, lacing up our shoes and flicking on headlamps. The entire Coyote Buttes area is unmarked. At orientation, we were told navigation relies on landmark photographs and GPS. With the dark cover of night, we were sure to double-check our path with the offline map I had downloaded. We were eventually able to exchange our headlamps for moonlight. As our eyes adjusted, we saw shadows of various land formations off in the distance. Our excitement grew about 40 minutes before sunrise when we started seeing striations marking the rock surface underfoot. With more light in the sky, the desert began to reveal more and more colors. With 17 minutes until sunrise, we reached our final obstacle, a steep, sandy dune. Legs burning, we threw our quads into overdrive and charged upward, not sure if we would make it in time. Summiting the crest, our goal was realized with only 12 minutes to spare. We traversed a few yards further, and then we saw it. Walking into the wave, our exclamations were nonstop. The rider in me lost all creativity. Wow, and holy cow, were all each of us could mutter. The wave's surreal curves and paint-like colors stretched before us, more magical than any photo could capture. The icing on the cake? We were alone. Truly, beautifully alone. For the next 3 hours, not another soul joined us. We offered a gleeful, "Nice work, God," and launched into a flurry of photos with 10 minutes to go until the morning light would be dancing on the rocks. With the full moon still in the light blue morning sky, I scrambled to the top of a beehive-shaped butte while Micah snapped away below. From my perch, I looked down over the area I had spent years dreaming of visiting. I took in the cinematic splendor, pinching myself at the thought that this place, with its depth of texture and variety of color, was not a sci-fi set. It was Earth. Sensing a change in the sky, my attention shifted to the east. Instantly, a sense of childlike wonder overtook me, and I scrambled down towards the rising sun. As the sky overhead turned a golden color, I climbed up and over an area filled with large, cauliflower-shaped mounds. Feeling like I had orbited to Mars and was skirting across space rocks, I reached the eastern edge and stood still as the sun rose to warm my face. A personal good morning kiss from the desert. As we made our way back down, the shifting light transformed the colors again. Back up I went to our original butte to capture the contrast. For at least an hour after arriving, both of our heads were on a swivel, continually smiling or exclaiming as another mesmerizing view caught our attention. We often find our enjoyment of an area is heightened by brainstorming photo compositions, so I had packed a few costume changes. When changing outfits, I realized that although rough underfoot, the eroded sandstone was easier to climb sans shoes. For the next hour, I scrambled barefoot, until two slips in a sandy slot reminded me that Martian-looking rock still obeys gravity. Despite a slight bruise, my elation could not be punctured. After 3 joyful hours, we finally paused for breakfast in the heart of this geologic wonderland. Next stop, the Mini Wave. Tucked just beyond the main formation, this vivid swirl of candy-striped rock often gets mistaken for Photoshop. Wind whipped through the narrow chute, giving us a taste of the forces that sculpted the sandstone's dizzying lines. While sand abrasively blew across our faces, voices echoed in the distance. Others had arrived. We decided to give them the gift we had been given, solitude. Turning south, we climbed towards Top Rock. Towering above the wave, Top Rock promised views we could not resist. After a steep, wind-blasted ascent, we reached Top Rock Arch, a natural window with a direct view down into the wave. At times, the gusts were so strong we had to brace the arch to keep upright. We crossed Top Rock to reach the alcove, a massive sandstone overhang poised above a sloping dune. The combination creates incredible perspective, lending awareness to the sheer size of this area. Due to high winds, we decided to skip past the blowing sand of the dune. Just beyond, we found a new favorite, an area we dubbed the Cathedral. It felt sacred, and we whispered in reverence as we slowly traced our fingertips along the textured walls and gently craned our heads towards the sky-high ceiling. Knowing the desert heat would soon peak, we kept moving, crossing Top Rock towards our final destination of the loop. Melody Arch, a graceful opening, ushered us into a shady, cave-like recess known as the Grotto. I set down my pack and climbed onto the far windowsill, looking out to countless other features. After 5 hours of exploring, the sun was climbing higher in the sky, a reminder that temperatures were only going to rise. We started our descent. Pulling my buff up to avoid inhaling airborne sand, the saying, "What goes up must come down," echoed through our heads. Reaching the northwest edge of Top Rock, we chose the adventurous, steep descent. We stepped carefully, mindful not to damage the delicate sandstone beneath our feet. We arrived just above the second wave, an area best lit later in the day. After snapping a few mental pictures, we circled back to the main formation and finally encountered our first fellow hikers. As more people trickled in, we took the cue to begin our exit. By then, the wave was aglow in bold midday oranges. Back over the sand dune we went, this time under full sun. Along the trail, we passed wildflowers and rock formations we had missed in the morning darkness. Roughly a mile and a half from the trailhead, we encountered a family huddled beneath a single tree, visibly overheated and underprepared. They were low on water, without a map, and unaware of permit requirements. We got them turned around and reoriented, hopefully in time. Soon after, we passed a ranger outfitted in trail running gear. After checking our permits and exchanging friendly hellos, she made her way towards the family. We hoped we had helped them escape danger and a hefty fine. By 1 p.m., we were back at our van, rinsing off the sweat and sand with sun-warmed solar showers. After covering 9.3 miles and feasting on a well-earned lunch, we collapsed into bed, lulled to sleep by a strong, cooling breeze. After a short nap, our alarm was hauling us up, back upright, groggy but determined. This was not the end. We had another goal. At 6:30 p.m., we rolled out again, gear packed for dinner, sunset, and stargazing. Our plan? Hike 6 more miles to return to the wave under an entirely new light and cooler temperatures. As we walked, the desert glowed golden, cacti blooming along the trail. The second ascent of the dune was brutal, each step weighed down by the earlier 10 miles. We pushed through, out of breath, but smiling. Reaching the wave again, now in soft evening hues, felt like slipping into a familiar dream. The shifting colors turned cooler, more muted. Alone once more, we settled in as the sun dipped behind the horizon. Bugs began to swarm, but before I could protest, bats swooped in, diving and feasting on the gnats with aerial acrobatics. My surprise turned into laughter. By 8:30 p.m., we were dining by headlamp on Backpacker's Charcuterie, a simple meal of apples, cheese, and crackers. It felt luxurious. Once Mister, our dog, had also enjoyed his dinner, the headlights went off, letting our eyes adjust to the expanding starscape above. After an hour of stargazing, our permitted time was nearing its end. Soaring high on delight and adrenaline, our tired limbs carried us out of the wave and back across the dark desert. A bright light shined from behind us, and for a moment, I thought perhaps we were not out here all alone. Turning around, we saw the moon, our steadfast companion, rising to lead us out, just as it had guided us in 18 hours earlier. Statistically, I may never make it to space, but after one transcendent day in Coyote Buttes North, I am okay with that. This part of the Arizona desert with its alien terrain and vibrant silence feels like another planet. Although the wave might not make official list of world wonders, it deserves countless accolades. It is, without question, one of the wildest and most magical places I have ever been. Author's note, this hike is not for the faint of heart. We logged over 16 miles in one day to avoid peak heat and crowds. The terrain is unmarked and challenging. Good navigation is essential. Hiking at dawn or dusk increases risk and requires preparation. Download offline maps via All Trails Plus or use a GPS tracker. Top rock and the surrounding features demand endurance and careful footing. But if you are able and lucky enough to get a permit, it is worth every step.
Looking for off-road trails you can trust? Onyx Off-Road shows you open legal routes plus detailed guided trails created by real off-roaders. You'll get photos, difficulty ratings, and terrain descriptions so you know what to expect before you hit the dirt. It also includes public and private land boundaries, a new dispersed camping layer, and offline maps so you can explore deeper without losing your way. Onyx Off-Road. More trails, more confidence. Try it for free in the App Store or Google Play.
An Enchanted Adventure, a tribute to Roy Bankford Inks II, a Texas Hill Country legend. Words and photos by Michael Rudd. I never had the chance to meet Roy Bankford Inks II, but after attending the 21st Texas Spur near Llano in the spring of 2025, I felt as though I knew him well. Perhaps we were kindred spirits, cowboys of the Old West, who rode the range on horses instead of in jeeps many moons ago. Jeep Jamboree USA founded the Texas Spur more than 2 decades ago after ending a long and successful run with the Y.O. Ranch, a legendary hunting ranch located near Mountain Home, Texas. According to Purse Umaloff, president and CEO, they were looking for a new location in the Texas Hill Country to host a new event. Around this time, Roy Inks II was getting his old Jeep serviced at an off-road shop near Austin and while there had struck up a conversation with a gentleman affiliated with the San Antonio Jeep Club as a trail guide. The conversation about their mutual passion for Jeep culture was passed on to Jeep Jamboree USA coordinators Tony and Nancy Winkler, and then to founding father Mark A. Smith, and the rest is history. The Texas Spur Jeep Jamboree's 2025 event was held March 20 through 22nd and timed to capture the essence and rugged beauty of the Texas Hill Country in full spring bloom. Blue bonnets mixed with cacti and native live oak trees enveloped in shades of emerald and lime were scattered across the rough and rocky terrain. The Jeep trails at Inks Ranch, initially put in place by Roy and members of the San Antonio Jeep Club, snake around many outcroppings, escarpments, and giant domes of granite, a landscape reminiscent of Moab, Utah. This ranch land is filled with sandy washes, stream beds, and water crossings that add to many challenges of the 8-9 trail rating. All vehicles participating are required to have a minimum of 33-inch tires and at least one locker to handle the rough terrain. This year drew over 281 participants and 153 Jeeps from 19 different states, many who camped at the Llano City RV Park, a scenic location on the river next to the Llano County Community Center, official headquarters of the Texas Spur. A couple weeks prior to the event, I met Roy's wife, Petey, at her home in Burney, Texas, a suburb of San Antonio, for a long-anticipated interview regarding Jeep Jamboree USA's affiliation with the legendary Inks Ranch. After a few minutes of introductions, she told me that her beloved husband had recently passed away. Petey mentioned that he was born on July 7, 1946, in Austin, Texas, and was the grandson of the legendary Roy Bainford Inks, for whom Inks Lake, Inks Bridge, and Inks Lake State Park were named. All three are in the Texas Hill Country near Llano, the area that Roy lived most of his adult life. Roy was an Air Force brat and spent most of his childhood in several states across the country and abroad. After attending Tarleton State University for a short stint, he joined the United States Navy in 1966 and was assigned to the USS Guadalcanal as a gunner's mate. After an honorable discharge, he attended Southwest Texas State University in 1972, majoring in marketing. Upon graduation, Roy began a long and distinguished career with Texas Parks and Wildlife as a contracting specialist, where he oversaw 17 state parks. Two of those parks were Inks Lake State Park and Enchanted Rock State Natural Area, the latter consisting of a massive dome of solid granite. This famous local escarpment can be seen from the Jeep trails at Inks Ranch by Texas Spur participants. Enchanted Rock was at one time part of Moss Ranch, which eventually became the Inks Ranch, and was owned by his grandmother's side of the family before the Civil War. The ranch was once part of the traditional area of the Comanche tribe known as Comancheria, a vast region that encompassed several present-day states, including Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, Kansas, and Oklahoma. The Comanche played a significant role in the history of Llano County, particularly during the frontier period in the 1800s. Roy's relatives obtained the Inks Ranch circa 1830 as part of a Texas land grant that encompassed 23,000 acres, and they ranched the rugged tract of land when the nearby town of Llano was just a frontier trading post. Petey met Roy at a gym in Kerrville, Texas in 1988, and they married in 1991. "He was lifting weights and I was just hanging around," Petey said. "It was just kind of love at first sight." They had four children together and raised the young family in the Kerrville area. Fast forward to 2016, and Roy and Petey were approached by Jeep Jamboree USA and asked if they'd be interested in hosting an event on their 2,500-acre family ranch located near Llano. Roy had retired from a 30-year career at the Park Service, and he and Petey relocated to the Inks Ranch, where he transitioned to his true passion for ranching. Together, they had raised a large herd of Angus cattle and offered exotic animal hunts that included black buck antelope, mouflon and Barbary sheep, and white-tailed and axis deer. Throughout the years, they hosted Operation Orphans, a nonprofit organization that provides children with unique outdoor experiences for hunting and fishing trips. The request from Jeep Jamboree USA to use Inks Ranch was a monumental moment for the Inks, allowing the couple to explore a deeper passion, sharing their land with Jeep enthusiasts. According to the Comanche, the land is sacred. It is home to many species of native wildlife, including white-tailed deer, coyote, bobcats, armadillos, wild turkeys, rattlesnakes, vultures, and soaring eagles, among a few. The Comanche were nomadic, inherently connected to the natural world and dependent on bison herds and wildlife for their sustenance and way of life. Their cultural practices and spiritual beliefs were closely tied to the land and its resources. Roy was adamant about preserving his ranch and its habitats, making sure that the Jeep trails were laid out in a way to tread lightly. The trail system he helped design winds around Watch Mountain, a 300-foot wall of granite that summits at 1,568 feet above sea level. I was invited to experience some of the trails with Mike Sipe, off-road events and training manager for Jeep Jamboree USA, and rode shotgun in his 2024 Wrangler Unlimited Rubicon 4XE. Holding on to my O-bar, I couldn't help thinking of the early pioneers as they traveled through this hostile terrain on horseback and covered wagon. While Mike analyzed his line carefully and crawled up a slope of slick granite in his Rubicon, I observed participants follow his lead in everything from badass rock crawlers built to the hilt overlanding rigs and old-school vintage Willys Jeeps. After exploring many challenging and scenic trails, we circled our modern-day wagons, had a lunch break, and reflected on an amazing morning of four-wheeling. As I rested under the shade of a live oak tree and contemplated on an awesome day of off-road adventure, I could have sworn that I saw Roy and Quanah Parker driving an old Jeep up the face of Watch Mountain. Squinting my eyes, I wiped the sweat from my brow and remembered Petey telling me that Roy had passed on September 26, 2024. The legend lives on. Jeep Jamborees are off-road adventures that have a long tradition dating back to 1953, when 4x4 pioneer Mark A. Smith organized the first ever trek across the Sierra Nevada mountain range via the old Rubicon Trail. These days, Jeep Jamboree USA holds over 50 events per year, both domestically and internationally. Learn more by visiting their website at www.jeepjamboreeusa.
Out here, the world slows down. And with Dometic FrontRunner, you're free to explore it all on your terms. From sleek roof racks to smart storage and camp kitchens, our gear is designed to keep things simple, organized, and ready for wherever the trail takes you. Adventure doesn't have to be rugged, just real. Dometic FrontRunner. Adventure. Organized. Find your setup at Dometic.com/FrontRunner today.
Stay tuned for Outdoor by Four's Issue 57, highlighting a myriad of stories that'll inspire you to step out and explore the world around you. Also, be sure to visit the Outdoor by Four website at www.outdoorx4.com regularly for new tips, reviews, and stories, and join our e-newsletter to stay in the loop on the latest from Outdoor by Four. You can also follow Outdoor by Four and the adventures of our staff and contributors on Instagram and Facebook at @outdoorx4, on TikTok and YouTube at @outdoorx4magazine, and by following the hashtag OutdoorX4. Until our next issue, we wish each of you the happiest of adventures.